Never heard this group so quiet.
I know. So let's get started here. Yeah. What do you call it? So we have one last hurrah as far as principle number 11. Again, principle 11 touched on the concept of reward and punishment. We had the opportunity to talk about two of the three main topics that it touches on. Number one, the concept that man has free will. Number two is that reward and punishment is not in this world. It's in Olam Haba, in the world to come. But what we didn't really explore, and I'm going to apologize ahead of time, that this class will not do it justice. It is a question that is wider than the sea. It's the ultimate question that every human being asks. And like I said, my goal tonight is to share a few insights about it. It really deserves its own series. And that is the question of why do bad things happen to good people or good things happen to bad people? I want to start with the following. It's okay to ask the question. I know it sounds heretical, but you know what? I only play a rabbi on TV. I have the same questions the rest of you do. It's human nature to ask when something happens to us that doesn't seem to fit into our pattern of good and bad or right and wrong. We're bothered. We're troubled. And we ask the question, why me? Or why so-and-so? It's okay to ask the question. You're in good company. As I've mentioned a few times already, Moshe himself, on many occasions, had this question. To me, one of the most obvious places is in the story of the Exodus. Picture the scene. Moshe is out shepherding the flock of his father-in-law, Yisro. God comes to him in the burning bush, tries to convince him to be the leader, to take the Jewish people out of Egypt. We're familiar with the story, back and forth. Yeah, no, no, yeah, back and forth. Finally, Moshe asks, how do I know this is going to work? God says, I'll give you two signs to show the people. But I can't speak properly. Don't worry. Aaron will be with you. You got this. Imagine. You have a guarantee from God. You got this. So fine. He goes back to Egypt. And he comes to Pharaoh with his brother. And he says, God said, let the Jews out. And Pharaoh's response is, who? Who said to let? No. That's not happening. And not only that, but Pharaoh ups the ante. Till now, he had provided all of the raw materials, the straw. Sorry, better, a little better, hopefully. He provided the straw. He provided what was necessary to build the bricks for all of this. And he said, that's it, no more. So he made it even harder for the Jews, and they started complaining to Moshe. Here's what Moshe turns to God. Moses returns to Hashem and says, my Lord, why have you done evil to this people? Why have you sent me? From the time I came to Pharaoh to speak in your name, he did evil to this people. But you did not rescue your people. You promised. I don't get it. I won't tell you God's response yet. But it's important to understand one of the nicest things about Judaism is not only do we tolerate questions, we encourage them. It's a very important idea. Judaism is not a religion of blind obedience. We are to question. Yes, you have to have an open mind for a potential answer. It's not a question if you have your hands on your hips and you just state your agenda in a rhetorical manner. That's not a question. But if you have a sincere, legitimate question about anything in life, you are asked, you are not only entitled, but you are encouraged to ask. There's no Hebrew word in the Torah for obey. To obey a command. The Torah uses other words like Shema Yisrael. Listen, pay attention, internalize, accept it. But obey? Now that's a modern Hebrew word. Litzayet is to obey. But there is no Torah word for that. When we educate our children, when we educate ourselves, it's not a matter of indoctrination. Rather, what we're doing is we're teaching the child to be curious, wonder about the world, wonder about their religion, reflect, inquire. The famous idea in terms of Socrates. Socrates had a habit of asking very discerning questions. Ultimately, he was put on trial. And he was accused of corrupting the youth and ultimately was sentenced to death.
asking people to promote questioning was unheard of. In Judaism, it's to the contrary. Asking questions is an expression of one's faith in that there is some intelligent answer. There is a meaning to all of this. Asking is believing that somewhere there's an answer. We ask, Rabbi Jonathan Sacks said it so beautifully. He said, we ask not because we doubt, but rather because we believe. Profound insight. Asking is important. So why? Why do bad things happen to good people? The answer is, I don't know. Thank you for joining me. No, let's see if we can explore this a little bit. There are basically three possibilities. Let's start with an obvious one. Well, you know why it happened? Because they're bad. They did something wrong, and now they're suffering the consequences. Even though we think the person is wonderful, we have no reason. I'm not telling you what the Torah's belief is. A person can say bad things happen because they're not really good people. Maybe they live a hidden life. Maybe they lead a secret life. Well, even if we thought they were wonderful, well, I guess God didn't agree. Maybe there are things we didn't know about the person. I think most of us, if we were to go down that road, would be extremely unsatisfied. We would be extremely uncomfortable because it may be somebody we know very well. Why does that person have it? Why? Because somewhere up there in the godly realms, God decided he's no good? That doesn't sit well with us. So you say, okay, there's another alternative. Some people say bad things happen because there is no God. There's randomness in the world. That's certainly a possibility if you look at it that way. Everything's random. It just happened to be this poor fellow was in the wrong place at the wrong time. His bad luck. I don't know about you, but that would leave me with a tremendous pit in my stomach because it would leave me with tremendous feelings of despair. I'd be overwhelmed and asking myself, then what's the point of trying to do anything if some random act can just cut it short? There's no rhyme, there's no reason, there's no purpose for me to do anything because it's random. There's zero motivation in one's life to make a difference in your life or that life even matters because anything and everything is just random. Well, maybe there's an alternative. Maybe you view all pain and suffering, well, maybe you divide it into meaningful or meaningless. You see, I think most of us could survive a very difficult, challenging ordeal if we felt there was meaning to it. If we felt that there was a reason for the experience. Any lady on this call who's had a child can relate to this concept. After going through 9 months of pregnancy, where I'm sure it's crossed your mind, maybe even crossed your lips, why am I doing this? Why? This can't be worth it, really? And then you go through childbirth and you double down on that. Yeah, but you know why you do it? And some of you have done it more than once. Why? Because you know that there's a purpose. It's meaningful. Yeah, is it uncomfortable? Is it royal pain? Is it something that no man will ever understand? Yes. What's the Carol Burnett line? If a man wants to know what childbirth is like, he should take his bottom lip and try to pull it up over his head. Yeah, we have no clue, but it's painful. It's extremely painful from what I understand. But you do it, why? Because you see there's a reason. You're able to endure it because there's meaning. If suffering and tragedies are meaningless because it's just random, people give up. You stop trying. There's no purpose in any of this. Neither of these two possibilities are acceptable in Judaism. Not the possibility, number one, is that it's just the person is bad, because the person may still be, it really is good. Nor is it the excuse that it's random and that there is no God overseeing this. Neither one is acceptable. So what is the other possibility? And what I'm going to share with you is initially hard to hear. but you need to open your heart and mind for an explanation. And most importantly, don't respond right now. You have to think about it. It may take time, but let it sink in. I'm going to say it once, and we're going to move further into it. It actually might be good for them. The person or the people who are involved who are going through that tragedy, it might actually be good for them. You see, a person has two components, and we've spoken about this many, many times. Man has capacity for two different parts, two different things. Capacity in the physical sense and capacity in the spiritual sense. One's physical capacities, well, that depends. Do you come from good stock? Is your DNA from your parents and grandparents that you are considered a strong person, that you're considered a healthy person? I thank God have good teeth. B'li ayin hara. I have good teeth, not because my dental hygiene is as good as it should be, but because my mom has great teeth. Somehow I inherited those genes. So we have physical capacities. Depends on my exercise. Depends on your diet. So whatever the design of your body is, it's a very complicated, complex machine, and a lot of it goes into it, but it has its capacities. But there's another part to us. The capacity of our soul, or what we would call our spiritual or natural talents and abilities. Everyone has the capacity to shine when they live with that inner soul's capacity. The question that we have to ask ourselves is, which one is a greater tragedy when it's not fulfilled? When you can't maximize both. Yes, we want both. We want to live a long, healthy, physically stress-free life, and we want the ability to maximize all of our spiritual strengths and abilities. We want it both, but we don't always get that choice. And when you're pushed against the wall, folks, and I'm asking you this question, which one is a greater tragedy when it's not fulfilled, the body or the soul? Which would you rather have? Would you rather live half of your physical years but achieve twice as much meaning in your life, twice as much accomplishment in a real sense in your life, even though it cost you half of your physical years? Or maybe it's better to live a longer life in terms of age, but only achieve a fraction of true meaning and accomplishment in life. In other words, is it better to minimize or lose some physical capacity to achieve perhaps a fuller spiritual life, or the other way around? I'm making it sound simple, but it's not. But if we are able to start to compartmentalize and to understand that life as we know it has two parts, and to only constrain and restrict ourselves to look at it from the physical viewpoint, we are not looking at a total picture. There's more to life. You can't only look at the physical debilitation. You can't only look at the physical suffering. There's more to it. Sometimes we're able to achieve as much as we're capable of our physical years, which need to be cut short. Not my decision, not your decision. But when you go through experiences, it changes who you are and you're able to accomplish. Think about somebody like Helen Keller. Helen Keller. Everybody here, it's a name that is universally known. Why? Because she had such a wonderful life? No. She had an extremely difficult life. But what did she do with it? She made something of it. She lived a difficult physical life, but what she accomplished in the spiritual realm, what she accomplished in what true meaning in life is immeasurable. Perhaps, and again, I always use the word maybe or perhaps, I don't know the answer, but perhaps the possibility does exist that God sees these people that have deep wells of spiritual character that are yearning for some kind of expression. They're yearning to be brought out, and they're pushed, and they're prodded, and they're, yeah, we would call it perhaps even some physical suffering. but it is in the end, perhaps in their best interest. And you say, well, where do we ever see an example of this? Well, I think if you ask a parent what they would be willing to do for their child, there's not a parent in the world who wouldn't do anything for a child, even give up their own life. Why? You were to ask the parent, they're going to say, how could you sacrifice all that? They would look at you like you're from Mars. They wouldn't see it as a sacrifice. They would see it as an opportunity. A mother doesn't see what she does for her children as her loss, but rather it's her absolute gain. She is a better mother because of it. You are a better father because of it. You can't measure it only in the physical, what you give towards it. It's what comes out of it as well. And therefore, the possibility definitely exists that, as we've said many times, it might be in this person's best interest. It might be for their good. And you say, but Rabbi, I don't see how this is good for me or for them. Let's go back to Moshe's question. Moshe asked, God, you sent me on a mission to benefit the Jewish people. Why is this working in reverse? You're making it even harder for them. God answers Moshe as follows. God, in the next verse, Hashem says to Moshe, Ata tireh, now you will see what I shall do to Pharaoh. For through a strong hand will he send them out, and with a strong hand will he drive them from his land. Now you will see. What do you mean, now you will see? What about till now? God was telling Moshe, you need to be patient. You need to wait until it's the right time to see it. You think the answers always come right here, right now, when you want to see the answers? I expect an answer. Yeah, that's called instant gratification. Folks, we don't live. That's not a real reality. It doesn't work that way. You have to be patient. Will we see the good in the end? The answer is yes, but it might have to take time. In fact, it will take time. It may take a day. It may take a week. It may take years. It may take a lifetime. It may take more than that even. But there will be an answer and you will see it. You will see it. The Talmud says that when Moshe asked the question of God, he wanted to understand him. And he said, show me your glory. God responded by showing him, again, it's part of a larger conversation, but the Talmud uses the expression that God showed Moshe the back knot of his tefillin. We know that the tefillin that's worn on the head has the box in the front, and then the back, where the two straps meet up, there's a knot. And then you have the two straps coming down. It's very cryptic, very mystical, not for tonight. But he showed him the back of his tefillin. And the commentaries tell us that God was teaching Moshe the lesson that only looking backwards, after the event, not at the time of the event, but only afterwards, looking in hindsight, can we possibly understand it. Our lives, right? How many times in our own life, on a much smaller scale perhaps, at the time, how many of us have said this? At the time, I thought this was the worst possible thing to happen to me. And then at some point later, you realize, wow, I had no idea that it was going to lead to this. That's how it works. Is God asking a lot of us? Yes. He's asking us to be patient. But there is an answer on a personal level, on an individual level, and I'm going to go further and to say it's true on a national level for the Jewish people, because the same question can be asked. God, you chose us as the chosen nation. We're supposed to be the ones you love the most. We're supposed to be the ones setting the example to the world. Then why the hell are you beating up on us so much? The answer is wait. You will see. The day will come. The answer is there. But right now, we can't see it. Is that a satisfactory answer that we go to bed smiling tonight? No. At least not for me. But is it an answer that puts it in a perspective that I can deal with it? The answer is yes. But wait, I'm not done. Because we really have to take this one step further that I think really puts the exclamation point on this. The Rambam Maimonides, not in this work, but in the work called Morin Nevuchim, it's called The Guide to the Perplexed, an extremely difficult work of which I've dabbled here and there. But in it, he describes that there's four levels of suffering that a person can have in their life. One is financial. A person is wealthy, a person is rich, and boom, overnight, you have a virus and you lose a large percentage, if not all of it, overnight. That's suffering in this world. There's other kinds. For example, one's health. Person gets physically sick or, God forbid, debilitated. There's a third level of suffering, of where it's called vicarious suffering. I myself am not going through it, but someone I love is. And I have to watch that person who I love dearly suffer. I'm not physically going through it, but I'm suffering because of that person, through that person. These three of the four categories, all, believe it or not, have negatives and positives to them. Some of the negatives are obvious. There are feelings of depression, feelings of anger at maybe yourself, at maybe God, or maybe a spouse or a boss. There are feelings of anxiety. Oh, it's your fault, my fault, whatever it is. There's clearly lots of negative that can be associated with. However, there's also some silver linings to this, a positive. You know, somebody, I think many of us, if we were honest, given the pandemic, we didn't ask for it. Not at all. Would we want it? No. But can you honestly say that you're not better because of it? You've worked on maybe family dynamics. You were forced into the situation, but yeah, you've come to appreciate certain things that maybe we took for granted till now. There are certain silver linings to it. Maybe, God forbid, if you have a child who is ill. Sure, you can turn it around and make it more stressful. Blame the spouse, blame the doctors, blame everyone. But maybe it's an opportunity of where, you know, you become a better person. You become closer to that child. You know, I know a family that has a Down syndrome child. I knew this person before he got married. And in my wildest dreams, I would have never seen that side of him. He is the most gentle person that I've ever met now. It's not the way I remember him, but that child has changed him. He is a better person because of that child. He's become so close to that child. He's become closer to his spouse through that child. I know families that unfortunately lost a child and they became so charitable. They devoted their time, their energy to help others who are in a similar situation with their resources. I'm not here to say it's good. I'm not here to say it's bad. But all three of these levels of suffering have both a negative connotation and a positive. You know what the difference is? Is you get to choose whether you want, and here are the two big words here, you can choose to be better or you can choose to be bitter. Better or bitter. You know what the difference between them is? Where's the I? Is it about me? What it's doing to me? I can't believe this. How could God do this to me? Or you can turn it and say, how did God give me an opportunity to make my life better, to make my child's life better and everyone around me better? Is it bitter or better? But the Rambam continues and says there's one more category of suffering, the fourth category. It's where there's no suffering at all. Let me say that again. The fourth level of suffering in this world is where you have no suffering. You say, I'm sorry, that doesn't make any sense to me. But it does. Because as we've just explained, given tragic situations, I won't even have to go so far, given difficult situations in life, and we all have them, I can become better. Maybe God is sending me a little bit of a nudge, a push in my life, that I can be better because of it. I would never have volunteered for something like this. But maybe if we go again with that understanding that God knows better and God has the global picture, knows what I can accomplish and what I can do in this world to make this world a better place, I need a little nudge in my life. And perhaps having no suffering in your life is a sign that you're written off. There's no more room. There's no more possibility to grow. No more possibility to change and make yourself or anyone else around you better. That's the worst case scenario. Perhaps because of our experiences, perhaps you'll say to me, Rabbi, I still don't get it. Yeah, I don't get it either. But maybe we need these experiences in our life to choose to become a better person, to create something to benefit others. And maybe specifically because of those experiences, especially the quote bad ones, especially the quote suffering, you're able to become the best possible you. Again, would I have volunteered for the experience? I heard a class this afternoon. I was looking further into this and I listened to not a teacher of mine. He's a well-known speaker. And of his 45 minutes, I would say he probably only had 10 minutes of anything worthwhile. I hate to say it. A lot of it was just stories. But in those 10 minutes, he did say something about his own personal life, of where he had a spouse, a wife, who unfortunately had cancer, suffered for 5 years, and ultimately passed away, leaving 6 children. And he said from experience, would I have volunteered for an experience of a sick spouse for 5 years, leaving 6 children? No, I would never have volunteered. But you know what that experience inspired me to do? I wrote a book. I wrote a book through my experiences that has now helped thousands of people cope. Thousands of people are in a better position because of my experience. I didn't ask for it. I probably wouldn't even want it. But through that challenging time, I'm able to help others. And that's, I made a decision, he said. I chose to be better because of it, not bitter. So let me give the quick answer to the question. Why do bad things happen to good people? I can't say, and I don't think anyone would have the chutzpah to say, for any specific event, for any specific person, that's beyond human comprehension. None of us are privy to be able to do that. But I think that the most logical and the most comforting answer is that it's not random or meaningless. There is a God, as we've said, who wants to give goodness, has the person's best interest in mind. It is factually good. Do I understand how it is? No, often I have to wait to see why it's really good. I can only appreciate it after the event, after the fact. It's my choice to face that adversity with the viewpoint of better, not bitter. Does it answer the question fully? No, and it really deserves much more. But I've really felt I had to bring this up when we talked about the concept of reward and punishment. This is a piece to it as well. I will entertain some questions, honestly, if it's going to be pushing further on the topic and to have specific answers, I don't think I'm going to be able to do it. Randy.
When you said you have to be patient for the answer, isn't that called faith?
I would say it a little differently. The only reason I can have patience is because I already have faith. I don't equate the two. But if I don't believe there's a God, then what am I waiting for?
Right.
So I would say that it's predicated on, and that's why I tried to start with that step first. And that is to go ahead and say that it's random and there is no meaning to it, then what am I waiting for? But since I'm not coming from that perspective, Maimonides is not coming from that perspective, he tells us that the next step in it, after you know there's a God, but how do I answer this? I have to be patient. Robin.
I guess part of what I'm trying to understand is if you are saying that part of what somebody has to accomplish is in your spiritual life. So it might be, like you said, it might be something happened because it's a challenge and then you learn from it. Let's say somebody dies at age 30, but they've accomplished a lot in their spiritual life. I'm not sure how that applies to children. Children. I understand for adults, but like somebody who's 2 years old, they can't have accomplished.
Why? Why do you say that? I know a family that the child died of SIDS. right? And this family has now taken a major leadership in their community of helping families. Why is that?
The family, right, but for the individual child, I guess.
But maybe that was the child's purpose. Okay. Who said that that every person is entitled to 120 years to fulfill their purpose? Maybe this child was able to maximize their entire purpose in just 2 years. I don't know, but I'm not willing to say it's definitely not. We are not given the playbook ahead of time. It would be nice, but we're not. But again, I'm not here to convince you. I'm here to present a concept that's built really in my mind. I don't think I could have had this conversation had we not had 22 classes prior to this on the 13 principles. Because you got to have an understanding of a global perspective of what God is. What's his relationship with the world? The fact that God cares about humanity. You have to have all of these pieces taken into context, which is why if we just did the topic by itself, it's an entire series. But I think it's not, I feel this was the appropriate place to bring this up. Susan.
She's muted, you're muted.
1 second.
I'm mute.
Go ahead, sorry.
I'm
muted. Thank you. Rabbi, the part I'm following along, and the part that I'm wondering about is the looking back on the other side of the tefillin part, and wondering if it does not happen in their suffering and there's growth for the person, but the ultimate why or the ultimate understanding doesn't happen in this lifetime. Can that also be so? And does that then hook up with what we've spoken about recently about Ha'olam Haba?
Correct. The answer is
so then it's a faith walk, yes?
That is correct. You are 100% correct. The answer may not be in this lifetime. But again, this is not the ultimate. You know, we're going to talk more about this in Principles 12 and 13, not this topic of good things to bad people, but the concept of what happens after all of this. You know, we touched on the concept of Olam Haba, a world to come, but there's two pieces left to all of this. And I'll just, you know, you can look ahead if you haven't yet. Principles 12 and 13 talk about the era of Mashiach, of the Messiah coming, which for very simple terms is bringing a close to this type of existence. And then you have the resurrection of the dead, which is leading into the next phase. All of this is connected. So the short answer is yes. It's possible that we may not see that answer until the next. That's certainly a possibility. But to know that there is an answer is what this principle is asking us. There is an answer. It is not random. That is what this is fundamentally built on.
Thank you.
Doctor?
He's muted.
Gotcha.
Okay.
Go ahead, Doc.
As I was listening, I was reminded of Eastern religions which believe in resurrection of the soul and karma. That is, what you are reborn with is a result of prior actions, the prior thoughts that must be played out in this life and as a natural consequence of previous lives. And I've heard other people state in Judaism there may be such a phenomena as karma, that is, rebirth of the soul and playing out of previous lives or existences. Can you comment on that?
I certainly can, but you're going to have to wait a week because that's principle number 13. The concept of a resurrection is very much tied to the concept of reincarnation.
Okay, thank you.
So you're going to have to hold on to that.
Hold on.
Hopefully you won't have to be as patient as some of the answers to why do bad things happen to good people.
That's part of the reason.
Yeah, the short answer is yes. There is a concept in Judaism of coming back to this world again, but it is not like you're referring to in some of the Eastern, you know, or the Indian cultures of where that's the ultimate, is to come back. That is not the Jewish view. The ultimate goal in Judaism is not to come back here. We want to move on to the next phase. But hold on.
Okay.
Hold on. We good? Fabulous. All right. We are not on tomorrow night, but we will pick it up again, God willing, Sunday night. Everybody have a Shavuot starts Thursday evening. So hopefully you have a beautiful Yom Tov, a beautiful Shabbos at the same time.
And delicious cheesecake.
And enjoy your cheesecake.
He already has his cheesecake ready. Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But everyone just stay safe and enjoy. Have a restful Shabbos, and I'll see you on Sunday.